Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you have reached American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. Your host, Paulette Young, is speaking right now, and Talena Lindsay is also a host. And we're going to have Barbara Colarosa on in a minute. And the topic is Oh, hi, Barbara. We're going to
Hi, Barbara.
Children. Is this okay?
It's
anybody
fine
that
for
wants
me.
To call in? Yeah, it's 858-769-4936 and press 1, and then you'll be heard if you have a question. Barbara will speak again tonight on best practices to use on children, teenagers, and adults without using manipulation techniques to influence changes in behavior. She's also an international speaker on parenting. She's written over 7 books, and her website is www.kidsareworthit.com. All right, Barbara, go ahead and start talking.
Thank you, Paulette. I'm sorry if I gave you a stir. I couldn't get the dial in. I was pushing the button too hard, I think. Oh, good evening to be once again with you. We're going to talk tonight about threats and punishments, bribes and rewards, which are literally the flip side of the same coin. A bribe is just a pleasant threat. You just said it nicer. But we'll get into that. Threats, punishment, bribes, and rewards are so common in our culture that we rarely question their efficacy, but we need to. These 4 tools do work. They also keep a child dependent and fearful, dependent on a parent for rewards given for positive behavior, and fearful for whatever punishment, and I mean punishment, not discipline. Punishment's doing something to a child. Discipline is doing something with a child. But they're fearful of whatever punishment that same parent might met out for negative behavior. They work when our goal is to get children to do what we want them to do. I want to raise children who are responsible, resourceful, resilient, compassionate human beings who know how to think, not just what to think, who are willing to stand up for values and against injustices, who aren't easily led, who don't do the please, who have that gift of skepticism and wonder that Carl Sagan said all 3-year-olds have. Well, I want your 16-year-olds to have that as well. And bribes and threats and rewards and punishments get in the way of that. If, however, our goal is different, as I just said, if we want our children to become ethical, compassionate, and creative, competent individuals who have that strong sense of self, they know how to think and not just what to think, who are naturally curious, that gift of skepticism and curiosity about themselves and the world around them, who don't do to please, and that's one of the keys, and are not easily led, who are willing to act with integrity, then these 4 tools do not work. Children have a difficult time becoming responsible and resourceful and resilient if they are controlled, manipulated, and made to mind, robbed of their autonomy, that sense of agency that they so desperately need, and denied the opportunity to make choices and mistakes. They can't develop a sense of inner discipline if all of the controls come from within. We can talk tonight about the problems with bribes and rewards and the problems with threats and punishments, and I'll just touch on that briefly because then we want to get to doing what does work instead. In parenting workshops, I never take a tool away from someone without giving them a healthier tool to replace it with. So let's look at what are the problems with bribes and rewards. Number one, it implies that the bribe is a threat of the possible loss of the reward. If you say to your child, you eat everything on your plate, you can have dessert, it's just a nice way of saying you don't eat it, you don't get dessert. And it also says what's on your plate so bad we have to bribe you to eat it. You know, think about that. And kids learn to do what they're told without question. not because they believe it's the right thing to do, but to get the reward or avoid the punishment. Kids learn, basically, to do to please. And responsible actions, and you say, oh, look at him, he's doing these things, are performed for the payoff, not the sense of self-worth or self-control or self-responsibility, which we want all of our children to feel. And you say, but it does work. But we, again, what is our goal? And children are robbed of the opportunity to take risks, make mistakes, and question adults for fear of losing the promised reward or losing their parents' goodwill. And children who do to please have no deep understanding of the deeds they've done and are also willing to go along to get along and often become those not-so-innocent bystanders in bullying scenarios where they may follow and do whatever you tell them to do, but once they get a little bit older, they will do to please that other child who has more power and says, you want to be my friend that don't eat lunch with the new girl. And they didn't want to be mean to the new girl, but they want to go along to get along if they're praise dependent and reward dependent. And deeds are done merely or mostly for the payoff, and siblings and peers are viewed as obstacles to their own personal success. And you don't want that. You don't want praise dependent kids who say, what's in it for me? What's the payoff? Did it count for anything? Will it get me what I want? Do you like it? Did you see me do that? Did I do it the right way, which means your way? Bribes and rewards can give us temporary compliance, but at the expense of creating less responsible, less resourceful, less resilient, less compassionate young people who will do to please, are praise dependent, less generous, and less committed to excellence. You don't want any of that for your children. And they often can train children for selfishness and greed. They learn what does and doesn't get them what they want. They ask, what's in it for me? What kind of person instead of, what kind of person do I want to be? The virtues of integrity, honesty, and kindness and compassion become commodities that can be purchased at an ever-inflated price. And bribes and threats and rewards and punishments all come in different shapes and sizes, each with its own unique ability to manipulate and control. And each is able to rob children of their creativity and autonomy and their sense of well-being. And it also robs them of something so vital today, and that's our connectedness to one another. It's what can I get? But that means if I get it, the other person can't get it. Now, the three most common forms are abundant praise, tangible goodies, and our presence as a reward. And kids who are constantly bribed and rewarded will spend a lot of energy trying to figure out what they can do to please or upset their parents, especially our strong-willed ones, and they will have no time or energy left to develop their own capacity to realistically evaluate their own abilities, deeds, and goals. Now that I've given you all that, what can you do instead of abundant praise and tangible goodies and our presence as a reward, remembering that the flip side of that, bribe is just a pleasant threat. A reward is just a pleasant punishment, except for, you know, it's, you either get one or the other. So let's look at what kids need instead. They need encouragement. They need feedback. And they need deep, deep caring, as well as discipline, which is a topic I've addressed before and happy to touch on a bit today. Encouragement. Praise can only occur at the end of a deed done the way you want it done. Encouragement can occur anytime. A kid falls flat on his face. How do you praise him? You fell well? Now, I know some people that would do that. Oh, look, you're moving forward. No, because we're afraid to make the kid feel bad. No, what they need is encouragement. And encouragement is one of the six critical life messages. When I was an educator and as a parent, any kid coming through the doorway needed six critical life messages. I believe in you. I trust in you. I know you can handle this. You're listened to, cared for, very important to me. Children need to hear that in lots of different ways every single day. A kid falls flat on his face. What he needs is, come on, buddy, get yourself up. You can do this. I know you can do this. This is tough, and I know you can do it. Notice I didn't say but. This is tough, and you can do it. That's affirming to the child that you believe that they're fully capable of whatever task is in front of them. They also then need feedback. Now, feedback comes in three: comments and constructive criticism. Compliment. Best compliment you can give a child is thank you. Thank you for walking the dog. He's been inside all day. Look how happy he is to be outside. Thank you for watering that plant. It was so wilted, and now it's standing strong. Thank you for inviting that new boy to sit at the lunch table. Now he feels like he's a part of the class, and that's hard. Thank you. We praise kids too much, we don't thank them enough, but I want you to notice how I thank them. Stroke the deed, not the kid. Be very specific to the deed, and let your child know how his or her actions have impacted an animal, a plant, or another human being. Notice I didn't say, oh, I'm so proud of you. It's stroking the deed. Thank you for doing something and explaining to them what they've done and what you see has been impacted by that child's behavior. You're reaffirming to them that they have agency in their life, that what they do really does matter. Now you say, well, wait a minute. Can I ever get excited about something a child does? Yes. A child wants you to wave bye-bye to the bowel movement at 3. You get in there and wave bye-bye to that bowel movement with as much pizzazz as the child has. What you're getting excited about is your child's excitement. Praise-dependent children can't get excited until you give them permission. Do you like this? Is this okay? We want to also, you know, a 5-year-old makes it down the hill without the training wheels touching. You say you did it. They're down at the hill at the bottom feeling so good, too. Think about that, how different that is than if you make it down the hill without the training wheels touching, we'll go to McDonald's. And the wheels touch, chances of them throwing the bike down, saying, I don't need any stupid McDonald's, or saying, well, my wheels didn't touch. You can avoid all that with just saying to a child, I know you can do it. Let's try it again. It's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to fail at something the first time around and get up and do it again. So they need to understand that we'll get excited, but it'll be based on your excitement. And then the kids learn, I can get excited about things I do myself. I don't have to check out first that mom or dad or the teacher is excited about it. So they need our compliments. They need our comments. Good, solid instruction. They need to learn how to care for themselves, how to dress themselves, how to make choices for their clothing, how to be able to pick out foods that are healthy for them. But that means we have to teach them. We have to walk our talk and talk our walk and let them know what we're eating. That means you and I, if we want our kids to be healthy, we're going to clean up the act. You say, but I've always told my kids, if you eat everything on your plate, you can have dessert, which again is saying what's on your plate so bad we have to bribe you to eat it. Instead, what I always did with my children and now with my grandchildren is I put dessert right on their plate. I don't care if they eat it before or after their mashed potatoes because it's fruit most of the time. And what you will find if you have fruit available on a regular basis for children, and that's part of their meal, when you give them a chocolate-covered chocolate cupcake, they are more likely to scrape the icing off. Why? It's too sweet for them. Because they've really gotten hooked on healthy foods. They like the way healthy foods make them feel as opposed to the sugar high that is irritating once they get in tune with their own little bodies. But we've got to teach them that. We have to teach them how to have a strong sense of self. And that doesn't mean an inflated ego. Bullies are very good. They inflate their ego by deflating other human beings. But my sense of self is in relationship to other human beings. Martin Buber said it so beautifully. I am I and you are thou, and we have a common humanity. I become more of who I can be in my relationship to you. And then we need to teach them how to be a good friend. We need to teach them to how to make friends. We need to teach them how to get into a group and when it's wise to get out. Those are our learned skills. We have to teach them to have manners. And I want you to be sure we're giving them manners, not etiquette. Etiquette are strong brick wall rules. Manners are how to relate to others to help them feel comfortable and to know some basic manners that help us relate more effectively with other human beings. In relation to food, we need to teach them how to behave in a smorgasbord, which means we have to have a smorgasbord at home for them to be able to practice. How much food do you take? Learning to watch if there's enough food to go around, and so they're not hogging their plates, or they'll learn to wait to take seconds. We're teaching those things. How to get into a group when you walk into a room. What are some appropriate manners to deal with that? So we're teaching them. They need to learn about their bodies, what helps make them healthy, how to calm themselves, how to get physical activity, how to embrace nature, to get out and enjoy. And you say, but we live in a city. There's nature in the city. And they can also create their own little gardens in the city. So to get out, fresh air, be moving, those kinds of things. So that's the second C, comments, good, solid instruction. The next thing we need to give them is something we're so afraid to give kids in a praise-oriented culture, and that's constructive criticism. We're afraid to tell them that something's not right. Now, notice I said that's not right instead of right or wrong. That's not right is bigger than right or wrong. Two girls making up a game, only two can play. There's nothing wrong with making up a game, only two can play. But it's not right if they purposely intended to exclude another girl. Intent matters. So I want to be able to say what you did was not right. It also invites a kid to fix it. This question, the answer you gave is not right. I know you can get it. Going back again to that affirmation with the six critical life messages. And how you treat an A-plus when your children come home will give them a clue if they can come home and tell you about the good, the bad, and the ugly. We want our children to be able to talk to us about things going not so well in their lives, about mistakes they may have made or some mischief they may have caused, or if they've done some serious harm and they don't quite know what to do with it. So how you treat that A-plus, your child comes home with an A-plus, you say, oh, I'm so proud of you. You take after my side of the family. We're going to put that up on the refrigerator for the other side to look at. You do that very often. I promise you. You will go to back to school night, pick up your child's desk, and find every paper in there that's on an A-plus. Because pretty soon, you know what? They can't bring it home to you. You say, but what am I going to say when my kid comes home with an A-plus? All I've said to my children, by the way, I still say it to my young adults and now to my grandchildren, is talk to me about it. Tell me about it. You have two kids in the same family. One struggles with spelling. The other is a whiz at it. I say, talk to me about it. And the one who struggles said, look, I got all the words right, even spelled February right, and the R's in a funny place. You get excited about their excitement. But the other child, you say, talk to me about it. He's all spelling ZZ. I'm not going to get excited about that. Spelling's easy. And so what I say to her, if you have a phenomenal gift, we need to help you use that gift. You know, we've been going over to the senior center, and you're old enough to come now. And there are some people there with Parkinson's. They have trouble writing. There are others who don't see so good. One of the things you can do with your gift of spelling is write thank you notes for them. Write letters to their families. Answer emails. I want children to understand you have a gift. You have an obligation to use that gift. You see, if you get all excited about that A-plus, chances are they're going to be less likely to take risks, and then they won't take advanced trig in high school. They're afraid they'll fail. I want them to be willing to take those risks, to pursue those things. So say, talk to me about it. Tell me about it. Give me opportunity. And when they've messed up, I know you can fix it. When kids make a mistake, you need to own it, fix it, learn from it, move on. Very simple in that regard. And so I want to say to a child, that's not right, and invite them to fix it, whether it's an ethical issue or it's just some mistake they've made, or it's that they made a game only two can play. So they need encouragement, and they need feedback, compliments, comments, and constructive criticism. The next thing they need is that sense of deep caring. Now, deep caring is the must to relieve somebody else's suffering and wishing them well. Now, I know there are some of you in the audience who have teenagers, and right now you don't like your teenager. You really don't like them. In fact, you wish you could stay on the phone a whole lot longer just listening because you don't like them. But I'll bet if something went amiss in their lives, you'd be right there. If they got in trouble, you'd be right there. And you put your arm in and say, we love you. You're in trouble. We know you can handle it. Brought a list of lawyers we think might take your case. Good luck, buddy. But you're there for them to help them work through a mess they have made. But deep caring says to students, you don't have to like every kid in this classroom. You must honor their humanity always. So we're teaching kids about the I and the thou. The other person is a thou, not an it, not an adversary, not somebody they have to compete with. We have to honor their strengths and their liabilities and the wonderful gifts they come with. So it's that sense of deep caring. And then we need to, well, we're doing rewards and punishments and bribes and threats, so we have the alternative for that. We also need to look at, instead of punishment, what to do instead. The understanding, we often use those words as if they're synonymous, and they are not. Punishment's adult-oriented. It's imposed from without. It arouses resentment. And basically teaches kids to respond with three F's, that are fear, fight back, or flee, into themselves, afraid to make a mistake or take a risk, or out the front door. And what I like to do with discipline, because discipline means to give life to a child's learning. Punishment, again, you do something to a child. Discipline, you do something with a child. Give life to their learning. So there's three different areas a child needs discipline with. And that's when they make a mistake, they create mischief, or they cause mayhem. You say, how do I discern the difference between those two? Think of it this way. A child accidentally marks on a table with a felt tip marker because they're coloring on paper and it goes onto the table. That marking is a mistake. Another child takes that same marker and does tic-tac-toe on that table. That's mischief. Another child writes another kid's name and a gross term. That's mayhem. Now, not all mayhem is bullying, but all bullying is mayhem. And there's different degrees of it. But now we understand what a mistake is, mischief, and mayhem. But how do you deal with that in discipline? Three-year-old breaks a glass. Be careful with the glass. Don't drop the glass. Crashes on the floor. And you look at them now. There are three kinds of families. Those of you who have listened to me before know that. Brick wall, jellyfish, and backbone. The brick wall parent says, stop it, stop it, stop it. You fussy kid. I swear you're never going to use plastic glass again in your life. You're going to use plastic. Get out of this kitchen right now. Which says, when you have a problem, you are a problem. And those are children I could spot in preschool who came from brick wall families when they made a mistake. They would cover themselves because they were afraid I'd hit them, which I never would. They cover their ears because they think that I'm going to scream at them, which I would not. They were expecting that, though. And they try to often cover their mistakes or say that they didn't do it because they're afraid of what's going to happen to them. They broke a glass. The reality is the glass is broken. Now we got to look at how to solve the problems with it. A jellyfish parent, though, goes, oh, sweetheart, what was I thinking giving you a slippery glass? Oh, I'm so sorry. Come on over here and have some chocolate milk while I clean this up, which says when you have a problem, it's somebody else's fault. And then I get your kid in school. And he says, wasn't my fault. Worksheet wasn't dark enough. Teacher didn't give me enough time. The kid behind me was bugging me or the classic. You don't understand, teacher. He hit me back first. Backbone parent. And look at the backbone. It has flexibility you don't get from a rigid brick wall. And we need to be flexible with children. But it also gives us an environment that's conducive to creative, constructive, and responsible activity you don't get from a jellyfish. So a backbone parent looks at that little one and says, whoa, you have a problem. Go get me a bag. Three-year-olds can't pick up glass, but they can hold a bag. You put the glass in, they help mop the floor up, and then you say, which of these two plastic glasses would you like to use today? Which says, when you have a problem, what you need is a good plan. What do you do with mistakes? Very simple formula. Every child needs to own it, fix it, learn from it, move on. Very simple. Own it, fix it, learn from it, move on. Now, our son, as a teenager, made a goal for the other team in a major soccer tournament. He got pulled out of goalie, went in his right forward, and headed down the field when he got a hold of the ball, right into his own goal. As his goalie's going, no, Joe, no, Joe, no. And as soon as he made the goal, he knew it was for the other team. Oh, he looked mortified. And the coach said, Joseph, get over here. And Joe went over and he said, Coach, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And he says, I don't want an I'm sorry. That was a beautiful goal. Now get out there and make one for us. Own it, fix it, learn from it, move on. Don't blame it on coming at a goalie. Don't do any of that stuff. You own it, you fix it, you learn from it, move on. And I was so glad he made another goal for his own team. And even more glad when the other team made one more goal so it wasn't just his goal sticking out there. But mistakes happen. And if you can think in your own mind, when a child made a mistake, can they own it, fix it, learn from it, move on? Now, fixing it may involve you helping them out. My oldest dropped my mother-in-law's birthday cake shortly before we went to grandma's. I spent 2 hours on that thing, put it on a white cake doily, didn't put icing on the doily to make it stick to the platter, which would have helped. But she goes to show her friend the cake. She moves it from one counter to the other. Cake and platter did not move at the same speed nor in the same direction. We have 2 inches of icing smashed on the kitchen floor. Now, I could get hysterical. But you know what? Screaming won't bring the cake back up. We scream as if we have reverse. We do not. You have a coronary, they get a new mother. No, I just say to them, I said, Anna, you have a big problem. Was I upset? Yes, I was upset. But you have a big problem. The reality is the icing smashed. The problem is we got to get a cake to grandma's. And she says, I think we can salvage this one. And she held the platter. I reached under 2 inches of goo because I believe you can help your kids. Reached under 2 inches of goo. Together, we plopped that cake back over. Now, since we did not live by the motto, cleanliness is next to godliness, breakfast crumbs are all over that cake. She knew right off the bat, she was 11, all the icing had to come off, new icing put on. Her friend is out there scraping the cake off the floor. And she's scraping the icing off the cake. And she said to Anna, doesn't your mother ever get mad? I was in the other room by then because I knew she could handle it. And I went to the door just to hear what she had to say because I knew the answer. And she said, yeah, a lot, but not when we have a problem. What I want my kids to understand, when you have a problem, it needs a good plan. Not a good excuse. Don't blame somebody else. A good plan. So this can serve you well when they're very young, all the way through their adult life. Own it, fix it, learn from it, move on. Now, what if it's mischief? That's that tic-tac-toe on the table. I'll go back to our son. He broke the beaver bait jar at the Natural History Museum in Denver. Could have been worse. Could have been an irreplaceable dinosaur, like very lucky, very replaceable beaver bait jar. I was so pleased he was not paddled, which, by the way, is still allowed in 19 states in this country, including my own state. And I always marvel when I see a parent say, don't you ever hit your brother anymore, as you smack the kid. You know, it says when you're bigger, you can hit or find somebody smaller. Punishment doesn't serve anybody well. He wasn't paddled. He wasn't sent to the principal's office, which could have been punishment, depending on how the principal handled it. Didn't have to write 550 times, I will not break a beaver bait jar. And he didn't get banned from the next field trip. Instead, his teacher very wisely said, Joe, you have a serious problem here. I know you can handle it. He had to write a letter to the Natural History Museum. He had to replace the beaver bait jar, which was a trip unto itself. And for those of you who don't know, beaver bait is female beaver urine. The child will never break another beaver bait jar. And did he have fun? Yes. So Saturday morning, he got to go with the game warden. He got his little knapsack ready, and the game warden very patiently explained to Joe how he had to collect female beaver urine. His eyes got huge. He looked at me. He looked at his dad, who was now smiling, and he said to the game warden, I have to do that? I thought the game warden's comment was classic. He said, well, I didn't break the beaver bait jar. And just as an aside, Joseph Sr. Prom was held at the Natural History Museum. What a fitting end to his public education. Now, some of you are probably wondering, a child broke a glass, and it was a mistake. A child dropped a birthday cake, and that was a mistake. Why wasn't this a mistake? It was mischief. He was swinging his backpack around, and his buddy was swinging his backpack around, laughing, as the teacher or the aide was talking about dinosaur legs. That's mischief. Now, his buddy hit him with his backpack, and they're both laughing. So Joe's going to hit him back. The boy ducked. Joey's strap extended as he swung the backpack, and it hit the beaver bait jar. That is mischief. What do you do with mischief? Show them what they've done wrong. Give them ownership of the problem. Give them ways to solve it. Leave their dignity intact. Can they have fun? Yes, Joe had fun doing that. There are people into punishment who get real upset about a kid having fun fixing a mess he made. No, but when it's mischief, it's okay if they have fun doing it. It was a learning adventure. He didn't break any more beaver bait jars, I'll guarantee you that. So we need to be able to discern first that we're going to discipline, not punish. Punishment is the flip side of a bribe and a reward. So you don't want to get into that. You don't want praise-dependent, reward-dependent, fearful kids. And so we want to discipline them, show them what they've done wrong, give them ownership, give them ways to solve it, leave their dignity intact. We're there to help with our wisdom, to help them through that. Now, mayhem, I'm only going to touch on it briefly, and that's when the intent is there to harm. That would include all forms of bullying, but it can also be destruction of that table, carving something into that table that's permanent. And so what do you do then? It's three R's, restitution, resolution, and reconciliation. You have to own and fix what you did, figure out how you're going to keep it from happening again, and heal with the person you've harmed. And that can start as young as 5 years old. A five-year-old bops the three-year-old over the head because I asked him for the toy nicely and he wouldn't give it to me. Brick wall starts to smack the kid and said, don't you ever hit your brother anymore, which doesn't make sense at all. Jellyfish, oh, please, kids, don't fight your brothers and sisters. You're supposed to love one another. Don't do this to me. Backbone, parent looks at the kid and says, whoa. It's all right to be angry, and by the way, it is. It's not all right to hit your brother. You need to take time out to calm down and figure out how you're going to fix what you just did. They need some time out. If they bop the kid over the head, they can't think rationally right now. Now, you got to watch the kind of timeout you use, because there was one woman in my parenting workshop who said, oh, I have my son on a wonderful timeout program. He hits his sister, and he goes and sits. I don't even have to tell him anymore. But he's still hitting his sister. It's not working. Or we have timeout programs where you say you're going to be calm in 3 minutes if you're 3 years old, 8 minutes if you're 8 years old. Oh, my, I get 75 minutes because I'm 75 years old. That makes about as much sense as saying to the 8-year-old, you'll be calm in 8 minutes. No, I say, I give them options. I say, you want to calm down in the rocker room or on my lap when they're little. And you say, you're going to have him sit on your lap after he just bopped his brother? Sometimes what an out-of-control child needs is a very in-control parent who can help them calm down, because that's only the beginning. Once they calm down, they have to do those three R's, restitution, resolution, and reconciliation. You have to figure out how you're going to fix what you just did. If he threw the toy across the room, bopped his brother overhead, and it broke, then he needs to go to his piggy bank and get money to replace that toy. Or if he can help fix it, he can fix it. But he has to figure out how he can fix the harm he's done. Now, the harder harm is that he hit his brother over the head. And one way to fix that is to offer to rub his head. But the other brother might not want him touching me. Leave me alone. But he has to figure out how he can fix it. Figure out how he's going to keep it from happening again. Now, most kids will say, well, I won't do that again. Well, that's good. That's what you won't do. Tell me what you will do. And that's where our wisdom as parents come in, where we can give him ways. One of the things you could do is offer him two of your favorite toys. One of the things you could do is stay away from him today and play by yourself and let him play by himself. There are lots of ways they can do that, but give them some options. And then the third is to heal with the brother you've harmed. When they're younger, it happens so easily. Well, they'll go and maybe hug their brother if the brother's open to a hug and say, I want to replace the toy, but meanwhile, I'd like to share two of my favorite toys with you. And this is how I'm going to keep it from happening again. When I'm really angry, I'll cool off first. Or when I borrow a toy from you, I'll ask for it, or I might ask you to swap it. Helping them figure out how they can calm their rage and then be able to express some remorse. Notice I didn't say I'm sorry, because I don't demand that I'm sorry. If it comes because they've seen it and they actually feel it, bravo. But if it doesn't, they still have to go through those 3 R's, restitution, resolution, reconciliation. So those are the 3 things. So what do kids need instead of brides and threats, remorse, and punishment? Encouragement, the 6 critical life messages. I believe in you. I trust in you. I know you can handle it. You're listened to, cared for, very important to me. They need feedback in the form of compliment and comments and constructive criticism. They also need a sense of deep caring that we're in this together. That must relieve somebody else's suffering, wishing them well, that you're there for the long haul for them. And then they need discipline. Show them what they've done wrong, give them ownership, give them ways to solve it. Most importantly, you leave their dignity intact. They're taking full ownership and responsibility for the messes they may have made. I'm open to questions. I know that was a quick run through.
That was great. That was really great, Barbara. I took notes even, as usual.
Well, you can go to www.kidsareworthit and get handouts on all of this. And there's actually one handout, Parenting with Wit and Wisdom, that has bribes and threats and rewards and punishments and how to turn that around.
Okay, that sounds great. So, and remember, any of you can go to her website too. www.kidsareworthit.com. Okay, are there any questions from anyone? Selena, do you have any questions? Hello?
No, I don't really have a question yet. I'm still trying to formulate what it is that I wanted to ask. Give me a few seconds.
Sure.
Okay.
It's a difficult topic because we just tend to be a very praise-dependent, rewarding.
I have a grandson, and from time to time, he wets the bed. I'm wondering how to handle that, because sometimes, he's very sorry that he did it, but in listening to some of what you're saying, I think we've kind of made a mistake, because sometimes what we're saying to him is sort of like it's a punishment, and
He's made a mistake. And one of the mistakes we might make is if you wake up dry, we're going to give you something. And some little kids are very deep sleepers, and their bladders are full, and that happens. How old is the little one?
He's 6.
Yeah, the mistakes still happen at that age. A wonderful psychiatrist I work with, Dr. Foster Klein, said, we don't worry. We always check it out, see if there's a bladder infection or any of that from about 6 on. But I don't worry about wetting the bed unless they're still wetting it by 9. And what you would do with him, you know what's so beautiful is now they have those little pants that can pull up that you don't notice under jammies, and they can go to sleepovers and not worry. And so we just say, you know what, just to be on the safe side, why don't you put those on at night? Nobody knows they're on there. And, when you get older, some of the old grandparents need those things too. So some people who have problems with their bladder need those. So it's not a baby thing. It's not a little child thing. It's just, do you feel like you'd like to wear those? And make it an okay thing. Because honestly, kids who get into a very deep sleep, it happens much more often with little boys, they get into a very deep sleep and they wet because their bladders are full. So we instead of changing the bed, making them feel embarrassed and the like, you go get some of those bigger size pull-ups. And make it an okay thing that this happens occasionally. And I'm very comfortable as an older woman explaining, it happens to lots of people at lots of different ages.
Yeah, I have something to say to that. And this is personal. I was a bedwetter up until age 11. And why it was bitter, I don't know. But someone on my dad's job told him, treat me like I'm in the training stage.
Yeah.
So he and all bedwetting stopped within a week because he would wake me up. I was waking up. And then I would go to the bathroom, and, of course, that night I was successful. He kept doing that. And I kept having successes to the point that within either 1 or 2 weeks, all bedwetting stopped. Because I was always embarrassed.
And it happened. It happened.
Yeah, but
he handled it well as if, okay, we'll wake you up. You know, there's little alarms that go off on the bed, too, that help wake kids up. But your dad did it in a gentle way. He was there
to wake you because he knew you were in a deep sleep.
The whole thing is to look at it. He never made mistakes.
Yeah.
Good. And that's what bribes and threats can do, is make you feel ashamed when you make a mistake. And we don't want that. It's honoring where a child is at, always checking with doctors to make sure there isn't a bladder infection, because kids can get those. And once that's all checked out, you know what? It's just a matter of maturation.
Yes.
But not making it a bribe and threat thing and making it an acceptable thing that they, look, it happened. And so at a six-year-old age, wearing those pull-ups are wonderful. Waking a child up in the middle of the night if they happen to be deep sleepers, not having them drink a lot of fluids before they go to bed, making sure they drink it early in the day because they all need fluids, those kinds of things. Making it as, okay, this is part of life, and we're going to get through this together.
Yes.
And we
now
can.
I have another one. I have a 9-year-old, of course, this autistic kid who seems to be pretty good at a lot of things. And one of the things he likes to do is he's kind of reckless, and he has a need for speed. And so we're constantly trying to get him to obey safety things and to live up to. If he does something, then he's going to hurt somebody, and maybe saying sorry is not enough. So
No, it's not. Tell me how old he is and what he's doing.
He's 9, and what he does is whether he's riding the bicycle or he has like a little, not all of that, it's little, but he has a little electric car that thing will go like 30, 40 miles an hour, but we cut it back so it's only like about 7 or 10. But he'll spin out in the middle of the street and snatch rubber, and then...
He's a little daredevil.
And he's the classic autistic. He talks in a little tiny voice, and he doesn't like loud noises.
My graduate work is in autism. And so with those kinds of children, they need some limits and boundaries that are going to allow him to be in a safe area and be safe. Those are the kinds of kids I like to get into programs like parkour, where you're learning to leap and jump, but do it safely. You're learning to take risks, rock climbing walls, where you're in a harness. And I'm going to bet you he's going to be one of the first to make it to the top. But it's under supervision where he's able to take risks, but within safety confines. And giving him... if he's spinning out on his bike, which is dangerous for him and others, then I say, you know, we got to slow it down like you did. But I try to get him involved. If you've ever seen a parkour class where they're leaping off of things, but they're doing it trained to do it, and it's with supervision, and again, a rock climbing wall is a wonderful way to let them take risks, see if they can get on to different levels, but they're always harnessed. And there's somebody down below that's helping them. And I'm going to promise you, with the children who are autistic in my program and children who had ADHD, and sometimes kids have both of those, they're the ones at the top, which is really reinforcing for them, because the other kids, instead of saying, oh, he's out of his seat all the time, oh, he talks weird, blah, 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 wow, look what he did. He made it to the top. and then they try to do it, and oftentimes they can't. So getting them involved in activities that require risk and speed, but are supervised with some safety. I got to tell you, my middle daughter was a stunt woman in Hollywood. Left off cliff and got set on fire. But it was all very safe. And of all the kids, she was the one who would take risks. But once she was able to be in like parkour and the like, she learned how to do it safely. And that's what I would do with a child with autism or a child with ADHD or a child who just do it in a space where there's supervision and there's instruction and there's safety. You know, when you do rock climbing, you're harnessed, but you could make it all the way up to the very top of a ceiling that a lot of the adults are still trying to make it up to, but within the confines of being harnessed. So that he can take those risks and stretch his limbs as far as possible. And it's not you there. It's somebody else who knows what they're doing that's helping them through it.
Yes, this one is something else.
It's giving them those opportunities. Children with autism, I'm going to recommend an amazing movie. It's called I Was Once Famous. And it's about a musician who was out of his prime and was trying to make it back. And he met a young boy who liked to play drums and was autistic. And it's an amazing story of how the two of them connected and how his mom was very protective of him and realized that this connection was very healthy. And music is a wonderful outlet for kids with autism. In fact, I, who am a horrible singer, with the kids in my class who had autism, the music is in a different side of the brain than other parts of language and understanding. So we would sing things. He would sing to me. I would sing back. And he'd be on tune and I'd be way off. But it was a sing song thing where music is a very healing thing, but it's also in a different part of the brain.
Wow.
Just a few suggestions there.
Barbara, thank you for your time, your wisdom, encouraging me as a grandma.
I'm a grandma.
Yes, I'm going to be a better grandma than I was parent. I didn't do bad, but I didn't have some of the tools that you talked about. So
I didn't either. And my mother once said to me, where'd you learn all this stuff? And I said to my own children, your job is to do a better job than me. It's called evolution, to do a better job.
Yes. So
yes.
It's, you know.
All right. Well, thank you, Paulette, for the opportunity again to share some of this with the audience.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll come on again in a few weeks.
I absolutely will. You know that. I will.
Sure. Yes. Then, not only rewarding to those that are on the program, and it's fixed where they can go back and listen to the broadcast at any time. So
sure,
I like it. So
I
thank
talk
you,
fast
thank
and
you,
I say
thank
it you. Fast. You're welcome, and thank you for all who are listening.
Yes.
Thanks, Barbara. Wonderful triple broadcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, and you picked up a few more countries out there, too. That's
great.
Listening.
Great.
I need to write them down. I said, oh, look at Barbara. She's over here now. You're in Hungary. I don't know if you know people there. You're definitely in
my
South
book's
Africa.
In Hungarian. My Kids Are Worth It and my bully book are both in Hungarian.
Oh, okay. Well, some of the audience there is listening. You're also in Japan.
Great.
And India. I forgot.
I had the
places.
Wonderful opportunity, Paulette, of being on Oprah as a replacement many years ago. And within a matter of 6 weeks, My Kids Are Worth It, thanks to her, was in 26 languages. So,
wow.
My first edition. Yes, I am most grateful to Oprah. And
well,
I was
great.
A replacement. I'll be a replacement on her show any day. Yes.
Yeah, because the percentage for the United States, you're at 80% For Canada, you're down, let's see, you're at almost 5%. But some places you're high, other places they're still, they're listening. And, you know, and
great.
Each time another country's being picked up. And I didn't
well,
do it.
It's been
you
a great opportunity. It's a great opportunity,
yeah.
Paulette. Thank you for it. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate
have a wonderful
you,
night.
Okay. We'll talk again. Thank you.
We will.
Bye.
We'll schedule another one. Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah. I'll call you in a couple of days, and you can, you know, let me know which Tuesday. Hello, Selena, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Hello, hello. Oh, okay.
Hello.
That was a good. Yeah, I can hear you. Okay,
wonderful.
Let me call you back. I'm going to call you back.
Okay. All right, bye-bye.